You are tuned to the Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton. And in the studio this morning, I'm joined by City Council members Donna Adderhold and Dave Lewis. And we also have a pre-recorded interview from Councilmember Catriona Reynolds. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. But first of all, thanks for joining me this morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And so, you know, first, if we just want to jump right into things, you are both, and also Catriona as well, are subject of a recall election coming up on June 13th. It has gone to the Superior Court in Anchorage, and the judge has ruled that the recall petition was sufficient. So for those of you, for just a little recap of what has happened, but at the heart of this is the inclusivity resolution, which was introduced earlier this spring and was voted down in a 5-1 vote. Donna Adderhold, if you want to kind of give a brief timeline of how that resolution began, just for those listeners can understand how this came to be.
Thanks, Aaron. So I'm going to kind of give the timeline as the resolution was intended to go through the process, and then I'll bring in the social media aspect of it. So in January of this year, I was approached by a Homer constituent regarding sponsoring a resolution. And then in late January, I talked to David Lewis about co-sponsoring the resolution because I knew that Homer residents had approached him about a similar resolution. In early February, about February 1st or 2nd, Catriona Reynolds approached me about the resolution because she had been working on a separate resolution that the mayor, through the clerk, had put on the would not put on the agenda. So, you know, one thing I want to say here is that at this point there are three council members discussing the resolution. So we can't have more than that. That would be, if more than three are talking about the same topic, it would be considered a violation of the Open Meetings Act. On February 2nd, the resolution that was drafted by the Homer constituent was sent to my personal email. I sent the working draft of that resolution to the clerk to add to the agenda for the next meeting, which was February 13th. But because I sent the resolution on Friday, I had missed the deadline for the tentative agenda for the upcoming meeting. And so it was then put on the agenda for the February 27th meeting. The clerk on February 16th sent me a formatted version of that working draft resolution, sent that to David, Catriona, and me to review for accuracy and as a working draft to work on before the packet deadline of the February 27th meeting. Then on February 18th, a constituent contacted me and suggested revisions to that working draft. I discussed those revisions with David and Catriona and the constituent who originally drafted the resolution. And then on February 19th, I sent the revised version of the resolution to the clerk ahead of the packet deadline on February 22nd. On February 23rd, the February 27th council packet was published on the city's webpage and included the formal version of the resolution with a number, no longer the working draft. On February 27th, the resolution came before council, and we heard several hours of testimony, most of it opposed to the resolution. The resolution failed in a 5-1 vote.
Okay. And so, yeah, thank you for kind of giving the overview. So my question is, and also part of the pro-recall group, part of their argument is that those revisions were made in kind of a conspicuous way. You know, can you give a reasoning for, you said a constituent was part of the reasoning for those revisions after you'd already submitted the draft to the clerk. But can you explain to us what those revisions were and why they were made?
You know, just to reiterate, most resolutions are not public, do not get to the public until they are in the formal agenda or the formal packet the Thursday before a city council meeting. This resolution took an alternative path by being posted on Facebook. And that was not any of our intent. And it was a working draft. That version did not have a number on it. The version that was in our packet was the final version that had a number on it. And you know, we do work with constituents. We work, you know, if we're working on a resolution by ourselves, we're working on that with people who have knowledge, who can help us with those resolutions. In this case, a constituent came to me with some ideas for what they thought were improved wording of the resolution, and I agreed and worked with the other council members to make those revisions.
Okay, and so the revisions that were made to the first draft that you actually submitted to the clerk for to be published in the packet. Is that correct? The revisions that were made to the draft resolution, you had already submitted that as a draft to the clerk to be published in the packet, right?
Yeah, I had to get it on the tentative agenda. I had a prepared resolution, so I submitted that to the clerk to be co-sponsored by the three of us. And but again, it was a working draft intended for us to be able to continue working on it until it is published in the final packet.
Okay, and is that a typical process to happen when you're working on any type of resolution? Are you guys typically making changes basically up until the date of publishing?
Yes, because you know the tentative agenda comes out almost 2 weeks before the meeting, so and it's also just a few days after the our last meeting. So things are always moving. They're constantly moving. And, you know, like today is, you know, is the deadline to, for the packet, for our meeting on Monday, so that they can go over things and then pull all the materials together to publish tomorrow. But in order to get something on the agenda, you know, you had to have it done by, you had to have a title, at least a title, by last
Friday.
Yeah.
Because on Monday of this week, they had to have the agenda set, because you have to have your agenda published a week before the meeting.
Okay. And if we just want to talk about the changes that were made in particular, that draft that was shared on social media, and this is what the Pro Recall group has been very critical of, is the several whereas clauses referring to President Donald Trump, and then also the reference to undocumented immigrants as far as resisting any kind of profiling of vulnerable or vulnerable populations or undocumented immigrants. If you kind of want to, why was that dropped? What was the reasoning for that being dropped out of the draft resolution?
Which part, the whereas clauses?
Both.
Or all of it?
Yeah. What were the reasoning for dropping the references to President Donald Trump and then also the phrase undocumented immigrants out of those that draft?
Okay, well, I'll talk about the whereas clauses first. Typically, resolutions are written in a positive manner, and I was troubled by the original whereas clauses, but couldn't quite get my head around how to make those changes initially. So when a constituent came to me with here's a way to do it, I was very happy for that. There's been a lot of discussion about this having gone from a sanctuary city resolution to an inclusivity resolution. It was never a sanctuary city resolution, never said that. So if that was if something was posted on Facebook that said that, that was not a draft that the three of us were working on.
Okay. And why don't we have a short interview with Catriona Reynolds. I was able to catch Catriona this morning in the Denver airport, so please excuse the background garble of airport noise. But we caught her just before the show this morning, so we'd want to play for that for the listening audience, please.
It's been a little bit now since the ruling has come down. Do you still disagree with Judge Marston's ruling on how a recall election and petition is supposed to be administered?
I do. I believe there wasn't actual grounds for recall. It's set up so that there are supposed to be grounds. The Alaska law is pretty vague. I think the city clerk and the city lawyer did the best they could do to interpret it, but they kind of said, it's so vague, it's really difficult to interpret this correctly as to what actual grounds are.
It sounds like the Supreme Court has previously ruled that they didn't want any type of barriers put in the way of constituents basically enacting the recall process. Do you agree that that the law should be liberally construed so residents and citizens have access to this type of process?
Well, I think liberally construed is in itself fairly vague. You can't recall for any disagreement, and that's what's going on here. The vote's really about the type of council we want to have here. If the recall succeeds, it's looking to activate a conservative base, or has activated a conservative base, and we did nothing illegal or corrupt, and no independent party, the judge and the city, has not made a claim that we did anything illegal or corrupt. I don't believe that the intention is that every single discussion should go to, or should have the possibility of going to a recall vote. Typically, if you don't like the way a council person or an elected official has acted, you wait till the next election and choose someone different.
In Judge Marston's ruling, he has basically said that the elected official's recourse for defending themselves would be that 200-word statement that they get along with the 200-word recall statement on the ballot. Do you think that is adequate for an elected official to defend themselves?
Well, I think that's reasonable if there was actual grounds for recall. And there were no grounds for recall. We were open and transparent, and we were doing our jobs. We were bringing forward issues that we believe for the betterment of the community. We knew that we represented the people who had voted for us, and we obeyed the Open Meetings Act. We were using our city emails. We did nothing that warrants people going and collecting signatures on a petition.
Also, Judge Marston, it basically said that it was not really the court's place to weigh into a city clerk's, what he called, a reasonable decision. So once a clerk has reasoned that a recall petition is sufficient, it sounds like the court is somewhat unwilling to intervene in that. I guess what's your take on Judge Marston not intervening in this particular case?
I think that's a reasonable interpretation of what his explanation was, but I don't think that was correct. I disagree that this recall should have gone ahead. I do feel confident that people understand how our local council works, and that there's many people who, whether or not they agreed with the resolution and the work we actually did, know that we were working within the parameters of what's allowable, and disagree with the recall even if they also didn't like the resolution.
Is there anything else that you would like to say that'd be important to note this morning?
I just want to reiterate that I have been careful throughout my whole tenure as on the City Council to be open and transparent and to obey the Open Meetings Act. I did get a chance to listen to a recording of Coffee Table from last week, and I just want to address Ralph Crane's repeated statements that we should have engaged with council members who might have had opposing values on this. And I agree, I would have liked to have done that. But as soon as I reached out to Donna and discovered that she had already spoken to Dave, that meant there were three of us in a serial conversation, and I could not reach out to anyone else. Typically, that is how I would have approached this. That was my plan. They are actually calling me to board, so I should probably go do that.
Alrighty. Thank you, Catriona.
Okay. So thank you, and good morning.
You are tuned to The Coffee Table on KBBI AM 890 Homer. I'm your host, Aaron Bolton, and that was Council Member Catriona Reynolds. We caught her this morning in the Denver airport. I'd want to remind you all that if you guys have your questions for the council members, you can call 235-7721. We'll be opening the phone lines in just a little bit here. And if you do not want to hang out on the phone, you can also email info@kbbi.org. And I'd like to remind everyone that you should identify yourself. That's how we do things here on the coffee table. Your name needs to be associated with your question. And so I want to kind of pose some of the same questions to you guys as far as it's been a little bit now since the court ruling has come down, and Judge Marston has ruled that the recall petition and the recall certification were sufficient. Do you guys still feel the same way? And why don't we start with you, Dave?
You know, that is the judge's interpretation of the law. I am not a lawyer, so I'll have to go with what the judge says. I disagree, but, you know, that and a buck and a quarter will buy you a cup of coffee.
And Donna?
I pretty much agree with both Catriona and David. I was definitely disappointed with the ruling because we were doing our jobs, and we were open and transparent, and I just didn't feel that the recall should be able to move forward.
And in this particular case, the essential facts were not really disagreed upon about kind of what transpired, but the interpreting of those facts is kind of what it seems to have come down. And Judge Marston and the Alaska Supreme Court have ruled in the past the Alaska Supreme Court, not Judge Marston, but Marston in this case has followed the Alaska Supreme Court, that basically the court finds that you should not, or the court should not put barriers in place of citizens to enact the recall process, that in essence, it shouldn't be wrapped up in so much red tape that they cannot, they need to be an attorney to access this. Do you think if it would have been ruled in your favor, that would have been putting unnecessary barriers in the recall process?
I don't think so, but you know, you can't really. What you are having now is government by recall. People don't like what you bring up. They decide they want to recall you, and that is not the way that government should work.
But as far as recall doesn't automatically mean that you guys are going to be taken from your seat. So as far as putting that up to a vote, as far as it still goes to the people. So is that still fair for an elected official to be subject to that?
I think, yes. Recall is an extremely important part of our government process, and I'm glad it's in place. And I'm also very glad that Alaska is a state that requires that there be recall for grounds. There are certain grounds that must be met. And in our case, we've been accused of misconduct in office, which, you know, the city attorney in her memo stated, you know, quoted Black's Law Dictionary regarding misconduct in office, which is dereliction of duty, unlawful or improper behavior, and official misconduct as a public officer's corrupt violation of assigned duties by malfeasance, misfeasance, or nonfeasance. And that has just not occurred with us. We brought a resolution forward at a constituent's request. We followed our city council process. We did not violate any law. We were open and transparent in what we did, and we were doing our jobs.
Okay. And for those callers on the line, we'll get to you in just one minute. One more question, and I pose this to Catriona. Judge Marston basically said that it would be not the court's place to interfere in what he called the City Clerk Joe Johnson's reasonable decision. As far as she's already made that decision, he also said that while the statute, the state statute, is pretty vague, that she adopted some reasonable definitions. I guess, what's your take on Judge Marston's view in particular on just not intervening in a clerk's decision on something like this?
Well, the clerk's decision was based on the lawyer's recommendations. And Holly Wells basically said that this could go either way. Either she could agree and it is a recallable petition, or no, it is not. And then either way, the city could be sued. So she was basically caught between a rock and a hard place and decided to go and allow the recall.
Okay, let's go to the phone lines now. On line one is Amy. Amy, are you there? Hello, Amy.
I didn't quite hear that. Was that me,
Amy? Yes, yep, you're on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, since we're now facing the recall election on June 13th, I wondered if one of the council members has the final inclusion resolutions, and could they read that, please?
Well, the resolution is quite long to read on air. But if Donna Adderhold, if you want to kind of give it in short, she's going through her papers. But we can get to that as soon as she finds that. But thank you for your call, Amy. Why don't we go to our next question, line two, Greg, and we'll get to Amy's question in just a minute. Greg, you're on the coffee table. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, morning. I really understand the reasonable effort because...
Oh, sorry, Greg, you're breaking up. Are you able to get some better signal?
Actually, let me move into a different section of the house here. Can you hear me now? Okay.
Sort of. You can try to go ahead again with your question.
Okay. I really don't understand the recall effort because this was made in a public forum.
Sorry, Greg. We are not able to get you through. If you'd be able to possibly email us the question at info@kbbi.org, we'd try to get to your question.
I'll call you on my landline.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Well, we'll just keep moving down the line here. Kathy on line three.
Hi, this is Kathy Carso. And I'm concerned about having a balanced city council that represents the diversity of our community. I asked this of the recall proponents last week, and I want to pose this question to Donna and Dave. How do you anticipate this recall effort will affect the willingness of people with diverse views running for city council in the future?
I think it'll actually hurt, the things that have been said. Unless you are a very thick-skinned person, it really hurts. We have been accused of some terrible things. We have been called liars. I know that Donna and Catriona have been attacked on social media and with messages left that would not be allowed to be said on the radio. And I don't think people would want to put themselves through that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And the other thing is what this means about what elected officials might be willing to bring forward for discussion at city council meetings. If it's anything controversial, city council members may just say, sorry, no, I'm not going to bring it forward. And I think that that's a real shame, because we should at city council be able to talk about hard things.
And going back to Amy's question, Donna, were you able to find the resolution?
I did, and it is.
It's quite long.
Pages long.
To read on the radio, but if we kind of want to get at the heart of the resolution, if you want to maybe go to the most pertinent part of this, as far as the whereas clauses and maybe the some of the resolution clauses as well.
Yeah, so the it talks about, the whereas clauses talk about the American politics has become polarized and divisive, that there have been violent acts targeting religious groups and minorities, that Homer recognizes that our community is diverse in regards to religion, political ideals, sexual identity, or orientation and ethnicity, and that no citizen should feel in any way threatened for their beliefs or physical appearance, and that the city should be on record as opposing all intolerance towards those individuals. The therefore clauses include rejection of expressions of fear and hate wherever they may exist, specifically towards harassment immigrants, towards women immigrants, religious minorities, racial and ethnic minorities, and LGBTQ individuals. That we embrace all peoples, regardless of skin color, country of birth, faith, sex, gender, marital status, political ideology, or abilities. That we will resist any and all efforts to profile vulnerable populations. That we will cooperate with federal agencies in detaining undocumented immigrants when a court-issued federal warrants are delivered. That we will steadfastly defend the U.S. and Alaska constitutions, especially with regard to the former's precedent-backed right of privacy and the latter's specified right of privacy, and safeguard rights declared in the Bill of Rights. Support our local police in their ongoing efforts to enforce law and protect our community. That we will declare ourselves a safety net for the most vulnerable members of visitors to our community, and that we stand against intolerance